Hey, everybody, this is James,
Marco,
Nabil,
and Mikey.
And this is the Movie Pals Podcast, podcast number 173. Today, we're going to be continuing our what we've been watching since we got some good feedback on that last week. So you can find out what kind of movies and TV shows that we've been watching on various streaming or in theaters. And then we have a main review of the new 2024 film, Challengers. So without further ado, let's get into our topic of the week.
Hey, what you watching?
So I'm going to start with you today, Marco.
How unexpected.
What have you been watching, buddy?
First thing I'm gonna mention is the 2024 movie Roadhouse, which we briefly spoke about last pod.
I believe Mikey and Nabil watched it, right?
Yeah.
We did.
Is that a question, Bill? Or are you
Depends on which Roadhouse film you were watching, guys. There's a few of them.
So, because of what these fine gentlemen said about this movie, I went at it with a very low bar and actually quite enjoyed it. I watched it with my mom, actually, because I know she was a fan of the original and was a big Patrick Swayze fan, and I told her, hey, there was a remake of Roadhouse. Want to watch it? And she was like, sure.
And so I think just that like added...
He's like, why are you being so weird?
I don't know. This is my voice.
So I think that added to the enjoyment of the film itself. It is batshit crazy, and it is a little over the top, as was mentioned last week. But for some reason, I kind of enjoyed it. Maybe because I was expecting it and knew it was coming. It just made it more entertaining. It was obviously a different flavor than the original. The original is kind of more straightforward, and this one is just kind of... It's almost like they added like a Fast and Furious element to it that in a weird way works. And my mom enjoyed it. So I think that also added to it. But it's like these guys said, it's on Amazon Prime. You know, if you're a subscriber to it, then go ahead and check it out. It's part of your subscription.
I guess I need to finish it. I've only watched like the first 10 minutes. And man, the CG fighting is kind of weird, man. Now that I know that they use like CG and AI or some shit to do the hits.
Yeah, a little weird.
Like, does it get better? Because it's like really noticeable, or am I looking for it now?
It gets about the same, but it was like Mikey and I said, it was entertaining. The fights were the highlight of the film, and also, you know, the abs.
Maybe this isn't a good movie for me to watch it right now.
That and Conor McGregor just being way over the fucking top, because he is a comic book villain
himself.
Basically, dude, it just works for the movie though, and yeah, I wouldn't say go out of your way.
I'll try to watch it before the next pod, so I can also chime in. And be like, I saw it now too. Look at that, 3 weeks in a row.
I wouldn't say go out of your way and watch it, but I mean, if you like action movies that are silly and don't like take themselves too serious.
You guys would consider it like a popcorn flick, right? It's like turn your mind off and just watch beautiful people fight, right?
Basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Aside from that, I also went to go see the 2024 movie Civil War. And I know these guys also brought it up last podcast. They convinced me to go see it. Just kidding. I was going to go see it anyway. I just didn't find the time until just recently.
Yeah, I was like, Alec Garland, come on, man.
Had to, especially knowing that it's his last directed movie.
By the way,
movie.
That was taken out of context. Apparently, he said he's just busy working on things, and he's not going to direct something for a while. But he's got already another movie planned, by the way. That was actually an update from what I said last week. I think I might have even edited that part out. But yeah, he is actually not giving up on directing. He's just... It was taken out of context from an interview, I guess, apparently. So, not his last
movie.
Got
it.
Yeah. That's good to know, though.
Yeah. Okay. I told you guys, I'm not the biggest fan, but I was like, that's cool.
So. Yeah, solid way to have a little hiatus on. Mm-hmm. I would say that this movie is very enjoyable. I really liked it, man. Everything you guys said about it last week, I agree with. Cinematography is great. The action is dialed down pretty damn good. It's very realistic. It really hones your attention onto what you're watching, and the fact that it is from the perspective of reporters, you feel like you're right in the midst of everything. He took quite a few creative decisions that I definitely enjoyed. Like, it's very much from an open perspective from these reporters, but I liked how he hid some of the details, you know, within the movie. I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to spoil it. I'm just going to say that if this type of movie, an action-packed movie that is also well-directed and well-acted, is something that you're into, then definitely go check it out in theaters. I really like that last shot. The ending was just fucking chef's kiss, man. So
the scene
fucking
that
good.
Where you're posted next to the president, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe you were in it. I was like, Joel is Marco.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit, man. Like, I didn't know I smoke so much.
I'm just starting to get my interview, man. I like that scene with the dudes in the Hawaiian shirts, because I just thought about it. It's like, would me and the boys be wearing Hawaiian shirts just trying to get on the building?
Yeah.
Hey, we also got a party at 2 o'clock, so we gotta wrap this bitch up. We got a luau to go to. So
dude, that scene in specific was also really good. It's just a bunch of regular dudes and Hawaiian shirts and, you know, the regular pants is, you know, taking out, you know, a fascist military. I'm like, fuck, all right, cool, let's go, guys.
Yeah, it's easily one of my top films of the year, so that might be a buy for me too. I know it's coming out 4K in a couple months, so
yeah. I went and saw it with my brother and we both really enjoyed it and couldn't stop talking about it for days, so definitely nice. One of my top movies for the year, highly recommend it.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, lastly, I also saw The Wolverine, the 2023 movie, part of the, I guess, Wolverine trilogy. I'm not sure if they really count Wolverine Origins, but
kind of.
It's sort of fitted in there. As I mentioned, me and my son, Zan, are watching all the Fox X-Men movies in preparation for Deadpool 2. And
so did you watch all the ones leading up to Wolverine 2? So like 2, 3, and Origins? Yeah,
we saw X2, we saw X-Men Last Stand, nice. We saw Wolverine Origins. And this one was the most recent one we saw. We saw it yesterday, actually. So
nice.
Yeah, this is the most recent. I didn't want to go through all of them, but we've been enjoying it, man. It's been quite a journey. He's been loving watching the X-Men movies. It's actually him that's mentioning, hey, can we watch the next X-Men movie? And I'm like, yeah, man, we still got quite a few to go.
He's enjoying them all?
Yeah. Yeah, he's really liking it.
Where they're all going to hit pretty
much.
Right?
We're watching it parallel with the original X-Men show and also the new X-Men 97 show, which is incredible, by the way. If no one's checked it out, I would definitely say it's some of the best animated writing for Marvel that I've seen in a very long time, even for any Marvel property, actually.
You don't have to watch the original show, right? You guys
are
no.
No.
That's cool, though. Did you guys watch the director's cut of Wolverine or the normal cut?
Yeah, the extended cut.
It adds a little bit to it.
Yeah. Funny enough, the Wolverine is the one I've seen the least. So, like, I barely remembered a lot of it. I know one time I saw it, I was dozing in and out of it. So, it was
a long movie, I think.
It is. But actually, it's only like 2 hours and like 12 minutes long. But still, like, the plot doesn't move as fast. There's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of conversations going on. But I also didn't know James Mangold directed this one. I thought he started off with Logan, but no, he started off with this one. And I saw his style woven in there. I saw him kind of improving on the character of Wolverine. Hugh Jackman, of course, he's in his prime in this one. He's just fully jacked and just going apeshit. The extended version really does do it justice because it doesn't hold back. You see, like,
a little more violent, yeah.
Yeah, you see the CGI blood splatters, you know, he's going berserk. It's a really good elevated version of Wolverine as compared to Origins or even what we saw in X2. We only get a glimpse of X2. It's great, but here we're just fully focused on, you know, his story and his background. We also saw the alternate ending that's in one of the featurettes, which if you haven't seen it, you know, skip ahead like a minute or so. But it's the one where they show that he gets the case and he opens it up and it's his OG yellow costume, which I thought was pretty awesome. Zan lost his shit when he saw that.
Is it the yellow and brown look, right? I think it's not the blue one, right?
It was kind of like a dark blue.
I think it's a yellow brown look because it's from the That comic line, he wears that costume, that one, that's why. If you've ever read the comic that's based on.
Nice. It looked kind of dark blue to me, but then again, maybe that's what I wanted to see. But yeah. It's still awesome. He's enjoying them, like I said.
Nice.
Especially with all the other X-Men properties that we're watching. and we're all set to continue down and finish it all the way up until Days of Future Past, because, you know, or actually Logan, and that's it.
What do you mean? New Mutants is the last one.
No, there's no other X-Men. No, what are you talking about? There's no other X-Men movie after that. Nope.
I mean, are you guys going to watch Deadpool? Or is that a little too highbrow for him, probably? I would say if you're going to you can watch the first one. There's a PG-13 version of it I have on there.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking. I've seen
that. Because that one, I mean, that one's pretty, both are pretty intense. I mean, I think he gets pegged in the first 10 minutes of the movie. So, I mean,
it's a hard experience. Yeah, I'm on the cusp on that. I'm definitely going to have to watch them ahead and kind of see, like, is this appropriate? Can I fast forward or pause some scenes on this?
No, but that's what I'm saying. Pause, the PG-13 one is actually told in a different format.
It's like Princess Bride.
It's exactly a Princess Bride. Funny enough. So,
but that's all I've been watching. Yeah,
that's awesome, man. Mikey, what about you? What have you been watching, man?
So I have a few new things. I watched Knuckles, which is a spinoff of the Sonic movies that came out. It's on Paramount Plus. Just came out, I think, on Friday. It follows Knuckles, which is voiced by Idris Elba. He, you know, comes back from the movies, and it also has Wade from the movies as well. None of the other characters really kind of show up in this one, which I was kind of sad about. But Wade is trying to make it to a bowling tournament in Reno, and he's kind of down on his luck. And Knuckles is trying to make him a warrior to kind of be able to, like, kind of stand up for himself and do what he needs to do. So that's kind of the premise of the series. Like I said, it's a quick watch, so there's really not much there to do it. And a lot of this stuff is just filler episodes. Even though it's a quick watch, it's still just a bunch of filler. There's maybe 30 minutes of actual content that's, you know, story driven. There are some stuff that's decent and pretty funny, but there's more about Wade than it is Knuckles. So as long as you liked his characters in the movies, he's the same person really in this stuff. You just seen a lot more of him in his daily life instead of, you know, the whole storyline they have with Sonic. It was enough for me to say, hey, go watch this if you like the characters in the movie. If you don't know who they are or just didn't like those two characters, then this is probably not the thing for you. But it was a decent watch, and it's real quick, so you're not really wasting a lot of your time.
I want to say we reviewed both Sonic movies, by the way, previously, and we all found them pretty enjoyable. So
yeah, I liked them.
Yeah, I want to check this out. So I mean, you know, eventually.
But it's quick, right? So I mean,
that's what I mean. They're like so movie fast. Almost.
So it's not bad.
That's cool.
Other than that, I did watch Rebel Moon Part 2. It came out, I think, 2 weeks ago. Not this past Friday, but the Friday beforehand. It's on Netflix. If you watch the first one, this movie is just a continuation. Obviously, it's part two. But just a brief overview of what it is. It's a large empire led by some crazy guy named Atticus Noble, played by Ed Skrein. He's trying to conquer a region of a planet so they can take their grain to feed out their people. The people they're getting the grain from has a person named Cora, played by Sophia Boutella. And she leads a group of warriors that she rounded up in the first film to rebel against them and save their home. That's basically what this one's about here. It felt a lot like the first one. So if you watch part one, this is literally a copy paste of part one. So it has a lot of the same elements. And because of that, I went into this thinking that part one was like a setup and part two was just going to be a better movie, you know, quote unquote, a better movie, because I already had the setup going through. But no, it just continues on with more setup. I talked to a few people at work about this and they all said that they fell asleep in the first 30 minutes. So they didn't actually like finish it out. Or some people said they started it a few times to kind of finish it out. So it's not, I mean, it feels like a long movie, but it's not really long. That said, the battles are still pretty awesome. It is a Zack Snyder movie, and it does feel like one. And in my opinion, he does fantastic battle scenes. They're very visual. They're very cool. And this was a spinoff of, like, or not really a spinoff, but this was supposedly written to be like a Star Wars movie. So they have a lot of the same elements. They have, like, laser swords. They're not actually laser swords. They're not lightsabers. They're swords that have lasers attached to them, stuff like that. But there's tanks. There's all kinds of crazy stuff that's going on. Lots of slow-mo. So if those are things and elements that you liked from some of his previous movies, they just are pasted in this one here with a nice kind of Star Wars-y feel to it.
I mean, I don't think we brought up the first one, but everyone's seen the first one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did watch the first one.
I was 50-50. I thought it was okay. I didn't think it really went anywhere with that first movie, but
the same, yeah.
I enjoyed it. That was pretty good.
I watched the first 15 minutes of the film, Mikey, and I couldn't make it through. And I said,
second,
you know what?
Part or the first part?
The second one. Yeah. And I said, yeah, I'll have to come back and revisit it when I really want to dedicate time to it, because it was starting off really slow. And I was like, this, like you said, it was mirroring the first one. I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready to go through this again. So I might just wait till the director's cut of the first one to come out and just suffer through watching them both back to back like that.
But then you won't know what the difference is, Bill. Come on, man. What are you doing? You're crazy.
It does feel like a very shortened version, or there's stuff missing, or maybe because it was supposed to be Star Wars and he had to change it up. Like, the things that he had to change up probably weren't enough to fill up like the rest of the story.
I don't think he needed two fucking movies to do this. Like, he could just have done it in one, man.
Yeah.
And the sound of it. I've heard nothing but bad things about the second one, so. Well, I'll get to it eventually. I'm like you, Bill.
Yeah, like I was thinking what Mikey was saying, and my mind was the same thing. It's like, okay, this is all just set up. He's going to have a big epic thing for the second film. And then obviously listening to what Mikey just said kind of proves what I was already seeing from the first few minutes. I'm like, nope, this is not what I was hoping it was going to be. And maybe it's not worth my time to dedicate 2.5 hours to right now.
Honestly, though, if you watched the first one and you were on the fence about how good it was, or if you liked it a lot, I mean, there's people out there that really like it, actually. I was looking at some Reddits and stuff like that, and people are liking what they saw. So if you're one of those people that liked the first one, I mean, it's a lot of the same stuff. So just watch the second one. If you hated the first one, I would say just kind of save yourself some time, because it's not
going to... I gave the first one like a 3 out of 5. It's one of those, like, you know, I'll get to it kind of thing. Yeah.
Like, they look nice. There's a lot of slow-mo.
I mean, just to put it in perspective, as far as a slow-mo, there is a scene where they are harvesting grain in slow-mo.
I've heard of this.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of the... you're going to see a lot of
slow-mo. My God. All right, what about you, Nabil? What have you been watching?
Well, picking up on some things that we've already talked about here in the pod, I do want to mention that I did finish the Fallout series on Prime. I know we talked about it a bit last week or last pod, and I'll just add on in saying that I enjoyed it. You know, I liked the Fallout games, but I was never like a big fan of, like, I was never really in depth of the lore, but watching this film has our show made me interested in replaying the games and actually jumping into Fallout 4 as well. So I'm going to eventually dedicate time to that. I'm not really sure when, but I did download it, so it's downloaded.
To it just got a next-gen update too, so
it did just get next-gen, which makes it even more interesting. So, but yeah, the show was great, and of course Walton Goggins is in it, so anything that he's in automatically kind of elevates the series. So just wanted to add my two cents that it's a very interesting watch for anybody who's not even knows much about the game or has heard ever anything of it before. You can certainly just jump in and really get sucked into the storyline.
Yeah, and just kind of reiterate, it doesn't follow anything about any of the games. It's still in that same world shared, but it doesn't actually follow any of the games there. So
it takes place after Fallout 4, right?
It's after all the stuff, every game. Mm-hmm. So,
because 76 is a prequel, right? 76 is a prequel, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Something like that.
Maybe.
But Walton Goggins is fire in this show. Yeah. I mean, he's
good in everything, man. Yeah. Even Invincible, he's good in there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Outside of that, I also watched the film The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare that came out last month, I believe. This is the newer Guy Ritchie film, and stars Henry Cavill, Alan Ritchson. They basically play. This is set in World War II during the height of the London bombings, where essentially they're getting Brits are stuck with not getting a lot of aid or support because the German Navy is just barricading anybody trying to come through and bombing them with their fancy submarines. And so there's these ragtag group of military recruits that find a way to get behind enemy lines to try to slow down these submarines and kind of give way for aid from the Americans. That's the ultimate mission there. And it's based on a true story, which was also very interesting. The movie, very much a Guy Ritchie film. So you've got the same kind of tropes as any other Guy Ritchie film you've ever seen. The dialogue's...
A lot of dialogue.
Yeah, very snappy.
A lot of Cockney accents.
Yeah. They all look really good. Even when they're looking really messy, they still look really good. The shots are... very particular style of his, but the film was fun. It was very much more bloody than I thought it was going to be, but in a good way. for the type of action and horror film it is. You know, they put in the right kind of fighting scenes, especially Alan Ritchson's character, who's just a psychopath. Apparently, he's a humble or a gentle giant, as they call them, until he finds a Nazi, and then he just goes berserk. And it's quite enjoyable to see him on screen playing to his new role of being the big, hunking guy, as he is in Reacher. So, I didn't want to talk too much about it. I know some of you guys have seen it as well, but I just wanted to add on that it was from a lot of the other Guy Ritchie stuff that had been coming out recently. This, as far as films are concerned, this was quite enjoyable. I was happy to see that there was something that really hit for him.
Yeah, Mikey and I saw this one when it first came out. And yeah, I'll say this much, not a lot of character development, which is like fine. I get it. You don't really learn too much outside of these little quick intros to the characters, but it seems like everybody had a lot of fun in this movie. It's very basic when you get down to the plot, actually. It's just them destroying trying to destroy a ship that could it's gonna supply the German U-boats so that, that they can stop them and the Americans can come and etc. There's kind of a subplot going on with Aiza Gonzalez's character where she's trying to she's like a spy with another character, and that I thought the parts of it were pretty good. For the most part, it's kind of a forgettable film though, in my opinion, but it was fun though. It was a fun movie overall, so.
Yeah, definitely a good watch. I liked the movie. I thought the action was really nice. Like you guys mentioned, it's real simple, but it doesn't need to be anything more. I still enjoyed it, even though they didn't really do character development. And I'm glad you mentioned Alan Ritchman, because his character is pretty psycho, and he made the film much more fun than I thought it would be.
Yeah, there's like, what is there, two? I want to say there's three scenes. So they have the opening scene. There's a scene where they're freeing a friend from an encampment, and then the scene where they're on one of these ships that they're trying to hijack. And each one of those, they give enough time for Alan Ritchson's character specifically to just go berserk. And and you don't expect it at first, but then as you're going into it, that they're like Guy Ritchie's intentionally giving him room to just go. Like, you're watching this whole,
scene in the boat, and near the end, it's like only one guy's getting out of that spot. And I'm rolling dice. I kind of know who's gonna be. So
yeah, some of the more enjoyable scenes, just to see him do that. Like James said, you can tell that they were having a lot of fun with it, and it was for as gruesome as it was, quite enjoyable.
Anything else? Well,
yeah, and then I gotta throw in my obligatory random show that nobody's ever heard of and probably in this group will ever watch, which is a show called Franklin that's on Apple TV. This is a story.
Marco, wake up, buddy.
What day is it?
Shoot, we're still recording? Sorry, go ahead. We're joking.
So this is about Benjamin Franklin. He's 70 years old, I think, at this point. This is set in 1778, where he is being tasked from Washington and essentially the United States government to go to France to try to drum up some support to help against a war against the British, because it's failing and they need all the money and support they can get. And so Benjamin's over there trying to schmooze with a bunch of French aristocrats to try to get as much money as he can over there and create the Franco-American alliance, end up in 1770. Actually, it was 1776 they went over there, my bad. This stars Michael Douglas as Benjamin Franklin, which is what got me interested in watching it, to be honest, because I didn't expect to see Michael Douglas doing a TV show at this point. But hey, it's... not something any of you would be interested in. I can say that by far, but it is very interesting to see him. I've always been curious about Benjamin Franklin because he was so admired throughout a lot of Western Europe and, of course, in the U.S. And he was much older than a lot of our... Well, he was older than our founding fathers.
Yeah.
Probably, if not the oldest, comparatively, because everybody else was much, in their 20s and 30s. He led a very interesting life before the Revolution. He was very much he was a royalist and changed sides, obviously, over time and became a revolutionary. And him going to France, he was leveraging his fame and his wealth, and people knew him. He was very famous there when he went to go visit. And so you get to see that aspect of his life, of him being a political tactician and trying to understand ways to navigate the French politics while also trying to circumvent British politics and the American politics. And it's a very good kind of colonial war Revolutionary War spy thriller, if you're interested in anything like that, but also good history lesson for you.
Nabil, the whole time, like when you said you watched Franklin, I thought you meant that turtle, dude.
No.
I was like, why is he watching the fucking turtle cartoon?
When you first said it, I thought you watched some movie, the Italian horror film. I was like, there's no fucking way you've seen that movie.
No, it's Benjamin. Yes.
Oh, no, like, we realize that, trust me.
I kind of dozed off there. Can you repeat all that for me?
I'll send you some.
This is definitely a Nabil kind of show. I mean, how many episodes was this? Is this continuing on, or is this already done? This is a mini series.
I don't think it's a mini series. I think there's supposed to be multiple seasons. I haven't finished it yet. I'm halfway through. But there's 8 episodes in the season. What I've been watching.
Yeah, so. I mean, we're just giving you a hard time, but yeah, this sounds incredibly dry. But this is something I probably put on if I needed something in the background to fall asleep to or kill myself in the bathroom.
So what have you been watching, James?
I've been watching a few movies myself. I actually watched a few shows, but I'm not going to bring those up. Mikey and I saw the horror film Abigail. I don't know if you guys have heard of this film, but it was a horror movie that was released a week ago or 2 weeks ago, actually. Now I'm thinking about it.
Looks really good in the trailers.
2 weeks, I think.
Probably 2 weeks. It's made by the director duo. They go by the name of Radio Silence. They're the ones that also did Scream 5 and 6. And truthfully, if you're going to see it, I would say don't watch the trailer. Although, you know, I'm going to kind of spoiler it. Like, it's about a group of thieves that kidnap a young girl, bring her to a house. They find out that it's kind of mysterious. Like, oh, they're trying to get a ransom from her dad. And then basically they find out she's a vampire. And it's a horror film. It is told in a way, Mikey can probably chime in on this too. I don't think it's a particularly scary film, but it was actually very entertaining, quite funny at times, by the way. So I actually found myself, there's a few moments that are, it's because the cast is so good in this movie. It's just like, it has the Melissa Barrera, the main lead from Scream 5 and 6. She's basically the main character in this film as well. But everybody has like a secret that is on the team, I guess. I'm not trying to spoil it, obviously. It's one of those things where I'm just trying to like, okay, I'm trying to tiptoe. But I think, for instance, there's like Dan Stevens. I don't know if you guys like Dan Stevens or not. He, for me at least, he's in Legion. And I think that's one of the greatest Marvel TV shows ever released. And I think that's something they should tap into one day, maybe.
And Downton Abbey.
Well, I'm just saying. I'm just saying from my perspective, I liked him a lot in that. And he's also in a movie called The Guest, by the way, which is amazing.
Yeah.
But basically, the way that this movie presents itself is like, for the first, I want to say the first hour, it's kind of almost like, is she like, what's up with this girl? There's like a mystery going on. It's kind of a slower buildup. But the movie does really well with every character. Catherine Newton's in it. She was just in Lisa Frankenstein. I think she's really good. Kevin Durand is in it as well. He's like a bumbling idiot. He's going to be he's a king ape in the new Kingdom of the Planet Apes coming out. And I think this is one of Angus Cloud's last films as well before he passed away. And he's basically playing his character from Euphoria, which is fucking hilarious. So if you like him a lot, this movie was really entertaining. The pacing, I thought, was really well, even though you don't get that reveal till about the last act of the movie. It is just, it adds a bit. I think it falls a little flat, though, at the end. I don't know if Mikey can agree with that. It gets a little silly to a point where you're like, okay, it is a vampire movie after all. So, but for the most part, if you're into vampire flicks, I would say this is a definite positive one. So,
yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with what you said here. The first half kind of threw me off. Like, I thought this movie was not going to be great. The second half kind of redeems itself. At least it's more of what I expected the movie to be. It's if you don't mind the setup in the beginning, and they do a good job of like portraying each character, what their job is and what their like special skill and their secrets are, like James was alluding to.
Yeah.
And it gets wild at the end. And that saved it for me. Like, I wanted the wild. I guess I was expecting more of a vampire film, so I kind of wanted that. But it goes pretty far off the deep end in terms of craziness. In my opinion, it's good. I like a more comical kind of vampire movie if you're going to go this route with it, with the whole heist thing being part of it. So
she's like a ballerina vampire chick, and she plays up on that like a ton.
Yeah.
Second movie I saw as well with Mikey, and apparently the biggest bomb of the year, apparently was the... I don't even know how to describe it. Is it an action? Yeah, it's an action flick. Boy Kills World. It's an indie film from South Africa. And apparently it only did $1.5 million domestically, because me and Mike are the only goddamn people that saw it. But I thought it was okay. It's a movie about a guy played by Bill Skarsgård. He has no name. He's referred to as Boy. But he's deaf and also mute. And he's narrated by H. John Benjamin, most famously probably from Archer and Bob's Burgers, throughout the film. And he is basically on a revenge to go back, try to kill the lady that's responsible for the death of his family. And the action is over the top. It is super violent. It is gory as hell. It is also very funny, though. There's a lot of comedy. Obviously, if you have H. John Benjamin fucking narrating your life, you can only imagine, you know, it's obviously a comedy to a point, but the action is cool. It's very shaky cam, though. At first, it was kind of jarring for me. The first few fights, I was like, oh, fuck. I was like, I'm going to get a headache off this. But the fighting itself works really well. And by the end, you're talking about over the top. There are some scenes in this film that are just ridiculous. It has a mix of, it's almost like the, I would say, Nabil, since you saw Monkey Man, it is like the intensity of Monkey Man times 10. I thought it
looks wild. The trailers make it look really wild. And I
thought it was a worthwhile watch, tell you the truth. It really sucks that, I was talking to Mikey right before the podcast. I think it's just really weird. That's why it probably didn't do well, because so many people probably saw this and like, what the fuck is this? But if you're looking for a really over the top action film with some good comedy for adults, obviously it is very rated R, by the way. I would say check this one out.
I will say it could be the marketing budget, because I saw the trailers, I didn't know that it was actually out. I thought it was coming out in streaming. I had no idea it was coming out in theaters.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I do agree. You mentioned that we talked beforehand, but you said it might be a cult classic, and I agree. I think once it's gonna get some traction, it's going to be one of those words that get words of mouth. It was entertaining as hell. I like this movie a lot. The action is over the top. I just love that he had to read lips, and he couldn't read some people's lips.
Oh God, we gotta bring that up. There's a character of a darker affliction that is mumbling a little bit in the movie the entire time, because he can't read his lips. He's literally thinking, he's just like, robot potato. And then, he imagines like a robot cooking shit. He's like, that's the plan? That doesn't make any goddamn sense. But he doesn't want them to know that he can't hear. And he's like, yeah. Because it's like a plan. They're trying to do like an Ocean's 11 kind of heist in a way, and they're explaining to him, but the guy gets him, he's like, sack of potatoes, something, blah blah, Yeti cup thing. But he's like, okay. And it every time they do it, they play it off, you would think it'd get like old, but man, it is fucking hilarious.
It was really good.
Like laughing, crying at that part. I was like, oh fuck, yeah. they got me. So that was unexpectedly good, and unfortunately no one saw it. So, and lastly, I'm going to mention two things. So, Mikey did a review of The Toxic Avenger last week, and for some reason, I was inspired. I was like, I want to know more about trauma films. So,
no one's surprised by this, by the way. There's you don't need to
watch Toxic Avengers 2, 3, 4, and Sergeant Kabuki.
Oh, and you watched the spinoff?
And the spinoff, because I was like, God, I'm a completionist, baby. I'm going to tell you guys right now, you don't need to watch these movies. You never need to watch these movies, ever.
You guys, I could have told you that before you watched them.
The fourth movie, I will say, right off the bat, is one of the most offensive films I've ever seen in my entire life. And I was actually laughing and enjoying it. But by then, I was three movies deep in one day. And maybe at that point, I was getting used to it. Because I was even telling Mikey at one point for Sergeant Kabuki, I was like, I think it's good. But then by the end, I was like, no, what am I doing?
Is this a fever dream?
No, I was like, this is insane. I don't know. I will give them the benefit. Like, it's cool that they are so low budget. You can tell. It is. It's like, man, we could have shot most of this shit, guys, together in the backyard of my house.
You can get his arm ripped off and you can see it inside of his shirt. Like, I mean
they play on the craftiness of how these movies look, but yeah, I went down that rabbit hole. Wouldn't recommend it. It is. Hats off to trauma fans. I know they're really diehard. I mean, talk about cult classics. These movies are all technically cult classics in a sick way for these people. That was it. And then the last, I finished the Planet of the Apes trilogy. I know Mikey and Marco, you guys did it as well. The newer Planet of the Apes trilogy, sorry, because I know the other one is actually more than three movies. So really good rewatch. Watch it with my parents. They'd never seen it before. First time watch for all of them. I think they really enjoyed it. So I'm getting ready for our next film, which is going to be Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. So I'm all set. And it was a really nice rewatch of them. So it's been a while.
They're so good, man. So good. Oh, yeah. I also watched them with Zan. He loved them. Yeah, enjoyed every one of them. So
last one kind of hits a little hard, man. I was like, ooh, I won't say anything. Nabila has not seen it, so
I will be more working, next week. Working through that journey that you guys have finished over the next couple weeks.
I mean,
it is one of like the best trilogies that have come out. Like, in my opinion, all three movies are really good, and they all hit really good. They all are just fantastic movies. So if you haven't seen them, definitely watch them. They're so good.
Yeah, that's everything I've been watching, though, guys. It was a nice mix of everything a little bit this week. So let's move on now to our main review of Challengers.
You think that tennis is about expressing yourself, doing your thing. You don't know what tennis is.
What is it?
Tashi Duncan.
She's in another league.
You're incredible today.
Come on!
To have a fashion line, a foundation. She's gonna turn a whole family into millionaires.
What are you gonna do now?
Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
I want you to be my coach.
I want you to be my coach.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl? Come here.
Which one of us?
Challengers. Currently sitting at a 88% Rotten Tomato score. This film is about Tashi, a former tennis prodigy turned coach, turns her husband into a champion, but to win over a losing streak, he must face his ex-best friend and Tashi's ex-boyfriend. This is directed by Luca Guadagnino, who also did Call Me By Your Name, Suspiria, and Bones and All, and was written by Justin Kuretsky's. This film came out on April 26th of this year and stars Zendaya as Tashi Duncan, Josh O'Connor as Patrick Zweig, and Mike Faist as Art Donaldson. So, I'm going to start with you, Mikey. What did you think about this film? Anything that worked for you? Any specific things that you're like, I didn't like? Share.
I like this movie. I thought it was really good. The dynamics between the three main characters are really well done. And all three of them do a really good performance throughout the whole movie. It's told in a way that it kind of reveals information as it goes. So I like the format they use. And the tennis, while it's kind of on the back end, it did its job kind of in the background, kind of being the backbone of what connects these three people in the beginning. So overall, I really like this movie. There was not much I didn't like about it. It's just an overall really well done movie.
All right. How about you, James? What were your thoughts on the movie?
Well, I really like this movie, too. I'm a big I actually really like Luca Guadagnino as a director. He's got some solid hits in the last few years. I've seen them all too. And this movie just worked for me, man. Everything, the tension, the story, the pacing, the use of music, the acting. I saw this movie twice, just to let you know. So me and Mikey got to see an IMAX early screening of it last Monday, and I went and I just saw it again yesterday. So I mean it's the first movie I've seen twice this year. That should tell you something.
Very cool. High praises there. What about you, Marco?
I agree with both these guys. Movie's fucking great, dude.
Marco is holding a tennis racket, by the way. I don't know if that was part of the theme. I didn't.
Wearing the little short shorts, too.
And a headband and profusely sweating onto the screen.
While chewing bubble gum.
And he just started blasting fucking music while we're talking. Fuck, man.
Music produced by Trent Reznor. So.
Oh, yeah. No. 100%.
I 100% agree with these guys. The dynamic between the characters is just great. It felt real. It felt natural. It felt like these people really had a history. The delivery of the lines, the delivery of just the facial expressions, too, when the camera would focus on one character or the other, is very telling on what they were about to say or what they were thinking. The duality of the title Challengers, where it's not just about the tennis game, but also about the challenging dynamics between these characters, specifically with Tashi and how she established her relationship with these two gentlemen. it was just great. It worked well. The music added a lot of tension to certain scenes. I love how that worked. I loved how when there was a tense moment, that music would start and it would get you on the edge of your seat and you're like, what the fuck's going on? And they're just having a heated conversation, but you're acting there and reacting as if it's like a full-blown action sequence. So I felt that worked. I'm not a huge fan of tennis, but this movie made tennis look like a very intense fucking sport, and I appreciated that.
I think it is a pretty intense sport.
Well, I mean, if it got you into the sport or watching more of it, Marco, I think that in itself is an accomplishment. So, you know,
yeah,
open coming up soon. And I echo everything you guys said. The film, I thoroughly enjoyed it as well. I think it was the music really helped keep things tense for the scenes that could easily just kind of be played off as, you know, we're getting into the dialogue or something like that, just following along. The music helped really amp things up in situations where you weren't sure what was going to happen or how you're supposed to really should be feeling at this moment. And I will say too, you know, I'm a bit of a prude, so I don't always like some of the steamy stuff that might show in these films, and the trailers really lean into that part. But this film was pretty tame, relatively speaking, for what they were showing in the trailers. Like, I thought they did it very tastefully, a lot of the more intimate scenes, and it went well with the story. Like, you kind of just, you can feel the intensity of things that were going on with the relationship of the with each of the characters without necessarily feeling like it's, you know, too overtly showing anything either. So there's a lot of good character development, I think, in here, like with between each one of them and their motivations and what they're trying to get out of each other from their relationships and their passion for their sport. So I think they connected on that really, that was portrayed really well. And Marco, you know, since we're talking about characters and you had something special to talk about on some of the male characters here, what do you think about Art and Patrick?
They're douchebags, both of them. I don't really feel, but I like the way that the director presents these two characters. They're not one dimensional. They're very complex. You know, they're human, so to speak. At some points you do feel bad for them. At other points you're like, wait a minute, this guy's a fucking asshole. And that tug and pull is quite interesting when you're like, oh, I've been in that situation, or, you know, this seems a little bit familiar to me, but at the same time, it's like, dang, like they all have their own motives. They all have their own little, I guess, schemes that they're trying to pull.
But that's
whether planned or unplanned.
Just to add to that point, like, Tashi is the same. You know, they've all got their egos playing.
Yeah.
They're all terrible people.
They're all terrible. Yeah, there's no character you're really rooting for. You're just sort of seeing how the chips lay out. At some points you feel bad for them, but at other points you're just like, man, you're all terrible. Because even when you start to feel a little bad for Art or Pat, again, like something happens, whether in a flashback or in a current moment, and we're like, oh, well, then I don't feel bad for you. Same with Tashi too. Like, you know, she obviously enjoys the challenge. That's what she enjoys about, you know, this whole dynamic and this whole situation.
I'll go to you, James. So, I mean, we can add on to that and also how the relationship's played out as well.
Yeah, it's like, because Tashi's career has ended pretty prematurely, right? And it's, she lives vicariously through Art, and she, I mean, goddamn, that's kind of spoiling, isn't it? A little bit, I guess.
There's not a little bit being spoiled, but
yeah, so she gets in with a relationship with certain people because of things she sees. It's almost like she sees the potential in people. She wants to be with winners. She wants to be the best. And at the time, it's like Patrick is technically more talented than Art, and he has more of a raw feel to it all. But he also doesn't take it as seriously, which Tashi doesn't like, you know? And then it's even like the way that they look at her, like Patrick notices Tashi for her looks, and then at the same time Art sees Tashi for her abilities. Like the first scene that you see them at, and Art's more even intriguing. The first time he even meets Tashi, he's talking about like, yeah, and the way you played is amazing. And then Patrick never wants to talk about tennis, because then Tashi calls him out like, you're not a real tennis player. And there's that relationship. There's a relationship between Patrick and Art, and it's like a very strong bond between the two. And I think that's what for me personally, that's what I was rooting for, was like, how are these guys going to rekindle their friendship for each other by the end too? I think it's one of the best endings I've ever seen, quite frankly. And seeing it twice really cemented that for me, of the way that it ends with something that Tosha brings up, that tennis itself is like a relationship, and there's moments in tennis where they play where it's like nothing else matters except those two people. And yeah, it does a really great job of doing that. And I mean, there's so much you could dissect between the love triangle, I guess, in the way between the three of these characters. And Tachi's very manipulative even off the bat. So it's like, who is this girl?
And she likes to pretend like she's not, but she is.
Oh yeah. But she does all these things, but she has her own intents too. And I would say, they're all not great people. I would say, there's times when Art is manipulating his friends because he likes Tachi a lot and he's trying to do things. I was like, who hasn't been there, right? But, it's just, it was real. I liked it, man. It's just like, it's a really good piece on three people. And I think the performances are great, man. Like, I haven't, Mike Fast, the only other movie I've ever seen him in is the West Side Story remake. And I thought he was great in that movie too, and that was like one of his first roles, I want to say. And I was like, man, this guy's just continuing building on that. I think Zendaya puts in like an Oscar worthy performance here too. Yeah. I love the fucking line when she tells Patrick, she's like, the only thing that you'd be good at is with a handgun in your mouth at age 31. I was like, fuck,
it got really dark.
Yeah, I love, she is, as Jadeli put it, has attitude and very mean. So
I mean, she's got a bite to her words. Yeah. And it
But it's awesome. It's their play on their characters, they all worked really well. The chemistry between all of them is fucking insane, dude. So,
yeah. And Mikey, what about your thoughts on even just like their performances in general? Was there anything that really stood out to you on or a specific character?
I guess like sweat.
There was a lot of sweat.
Dripping.
But I mean, James kind of just went over it here. I mean, the performances are really good between all three of the main characters. They all have like kind of their one-on-one relationship that they're all working with. And they all, I feel like at least they're taking those relationships separately, but they also have to consider them as a trio, which is kind of weird to say, but they all kind of work together. You can feel like they're the two guys, Art and Patrick. You can feel that they have kind of a brotherly, competitive nature between the two of them. There's also some, scenes in there between the two of them that are a little bit less brotherly, as far as that stuff goes. And then they both have this play with Tachi as well, where they have a relationship with her, but the relationships are very different from each other. So it's, Art's got the whole, and we already kind of talked about this too here, so I guess I'm really not throwing here, but to kind of go through a little bit more stuff we haven't talked about yet, is I really think there is a triangle here, and it's really Tachi seeing the trio as a complete relationship, and everybody fills a role in that relationship, rather than having just a two-person relationship. There's a three-person relationship that just works for all three people, and they just kind of have to figure out how that works. And I feel like that's kind of what the premises of this movie is. Like, hey, these three people, we've already kind of felt about their personalities and everything like that, the performances, but it's really just this is not a standard relationship between these three people, and this is how, these three people are kind of going to go on and proceed in life. They're just going to have to be together as a trio instead of as a couple.
And that's a good point you bring up. As I think about it, each one of them needs each other in some way in their life, right? It's not just about Tachi deciding between these two guys. Like, the guys need her just as much as she needs them, kind of thing. And they all serve a different purpose in that relationship, whether or not their egos get the best of them for their drive and their careers. It's still very much, I mean, it is. It's a throuple. If it could be, it would be a throuple in this case. So moving on to just about the story, there's a lot that happens, but there's also not a lot that happens in this plot. But it's like less is more in this situation with what they have. One of the few instances I feel where a very simple story is told extremely well, where we look at this film starts and ends in the same tennis match. You're seeing it from the beginning to the end, and then they're interlacing other parts of the story and the history of the characters in it. But from the get-go, you're opening up in the scene of them having this quote-unquote, like...
Tarantino this let's find out how we got to this point, boys.
exactly what he did there. And it's very well executed, and like James said, one of the best endings I think in a film that I've seen in a long time, where it just kind of it ends in a way where you don't know what the outcome is, but you also understand everything and why it led up to that. So let me go to you, James, and just get your thoughts a bit on what you thought really stood out with how this film was being told and what the themes were to you.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple, man. It's hard to even go on. I thought, first off, pacing was just what worked so well for this movie, for a movie that's, 2 hours, 10 minutes long. And, I mean, I saw it twice, and even the second time around, I was like, damn, it's about to be over again. Yeah. And... there's a lot. It's a lot of things about greed. It's about what people really want with people. It's about relationships. It's about betrayal. It's about just life in general through tennis players. But no one's. It's like, hey, yeah, they're not great people. But no one's perfect, though. I mean, yeah. It's one of those films where it's and like Mikey, that's great how you said. Yeah, they all need each other somehow in some way to get what they want, and it's good, man. It's just good. I know it's so hard to fucking like pinpoint it for me right now, but I got like 1,000 things in my head, but it's really just about how certain people can manipulate other people, but then in their ways they're also being manipulated by others as well, and it's like a dog eat dog world kind of a life, you know. So
well, Marco said it earlier. It's almost like they're very human, right? I mean, like all of us have made mistakes. Mm-hmm. We've all been a shitty person at some point, right? And these characters are just like the amplified versions of.
Agreed, 100%. And also what James is saying is, you know, it's a million things in one. It's very hard to pinpoint. It brings out so much between the dynamics of these people. You know, and their rise and fall, their redemptions, their realizations, everything, and their even their failures. I think what really brings them out also is their imperfections. Is the fact that they, you know, right when you think they're redeemed, they do something shitty, or you know, they make mistakes. And I think that's what really makes characters interesting, is seeing those imperfections and seeing. The mistakes that we've made in our lives in them, like, oh, you feel validated, you know, to a point. Even though, you know, I've never played tennis, even though, I mean, except for PE in high school, like, like James said, we've all in some point done or been in a similar situation.
Shitty things. These people.
Yeah,
we've tried. Exactly. We've said shit to people to try to trigger them to fucking start thinking of negative shit about people. It's like hitting kind of close to the heart here. You know,
at least one or two or three of us or all of us have been in a love triangle at some point in our lives. It's one of the.
I've made out with Marco fucking twice. I mean, it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
I didn't care the chick was there. I said, get out of here.
She went home, dude. It was just us in the room.
Yeah, just to be like, hey, we got a match tomorrow. I'm like, what are we even doing here?
Oh no, my shorts too small.
What happened? God, don't look at me. But yeah, you know, no, I agree. All jokes aside, yeah, it's really well done, man. I'm shocked by how well done this movie is. It's probably out of all the movies I've seen, all his previous films, and this one hits, man.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the one thing we haven't touched too much on, which is the tennis aspect of it. And I'm gonna go back to you a bit, Marco, because I know you said that it actually got you interested into the sport. So what is it about the tennis scenes that really stood out to you?
The intensity, the way they were filmed. And what just to clarify, I meant like from an audience perspective, like it didn't seem like a sport that I'm really like interested in. Obviously, like the athletes involved in it, I mean, it takes a lot of skill, a lot of coordination, any sport. But just the way they were shot, the slow motion shots, the POV shots really made these scenes pop, where you're following the direction of the ball, or you're following the direction of the racket, your POV shots of the actual players themselves playing. the director used everything in his arsenal to make these scenes really pop out and really different. And I think that's what made those scenes intense. How they were interwoven or in some way related to the flashback scene and how it explained whatever certain move either Art or Pat did when they served the ball to each other or they hit it back to each other, I think worked really well. And it made those action shots that much more impactful.
You know, they linked the tennis to the actual story as well. There's some elements that some of the storyline is told, and they do things in the tennis match that kind of links it to some of the stuff kind of brought up. Right. And, and I don't want to give it away because they use it, you know, towards some of the spoiler stuff that we could get into. So, but yeah, there's a lot of things that link the flashbacks and the things that they did in the past to what they are now doing in this live tennis match that, you know, progresses through the whole story. And it just, even though the tennis itself is really nice, it kind of is used as part of the story as well.
Yeah, it was a good medium to tell the story. I think it was a really good setting of building up this tension and seeing where the relationship are. And each match essentially is representation of a period of their life. It was all leading up to this kind of thing. So it was a very well added trope into this film. And just to add a little bit more on like the storytelling of this movie, I think it was mentioned already, but the music was very influential as well on how it kept the film on pace and also set the tone on some of the scenes. I'm going to just go actually to you, Mikey. And was there anything special to you that like resonated from a music perspective of this film?
So I wasn't as keen on the music as the rest of you guys, it sounds like, at least. I didn't mind the music and their choices and like when it was done, because it does make the talking points. And I think Marco was saying it earlier. I mean, they're just having a conversation and the music comes in, and it kind of makes it more intense. And I think James and me were talking after the movie as well about how it just kind of intensifies everything.
Really does.
But it was just the levels that they was playing at.
It was, I'm telling you, it's all right. I'm actually your man, because I saw it in normal theater yesterday and it was fine. Because the first thing I thought of when watching that was like, oh, Mikey would have probably liked this version a little better. But I actually liked that. It was blowing my fucking ears out again. Once again, Fearfoot IMAX needs to go back there and fix that thing. Because, man, I'm telling you, every time my watch is telling me I'm getting hearing loss every
bring my boy now. James over to fix it. I thought of you during those scenes. I was like, Mikey probably not gonna like this music.
You know, and I don't know what it is. It hasn't just been this movie. It's been like the last.
It started like with John Wick Part 4.
Yeah,
John Wick,
yeah.
Where he was punching, and I was like, yeah, a little. I was like, I've never complained about sound, but even I was like, man, I wish I could turn this down a little bit. I'm like, am I getting old?
Yeah, it's intense, and it probably is just a theater then, especially since, you know, James knows me and the movies that I'm usually calling out in the sound. And if he saw it in another theater and said, hey, it was much better, I trust that. So,
yeah,
that was good.
I would say JBX in Vacaville has it set pretty well. It doesn't get too loud.
We got that unlimited, baby. Come on, man. It is another character to this movie, I think.
It is. Yep.
Anytime there's certain themes that only come on when two characters are together, and it's just, especially in the ending scene where the music comes back in, a reveal is made, and then things intensify, it just adds to it, man. I really like the music to this.
There's one scene in specific where I really liked it.
Two. I was kidding. One thing I want to bring up real quick, too, is that for a movie that has all these flashbacks, too, I think it does a really good job of not confusing you like The Witcher season 1. So the way that it plays out is that they do give you little hints like, oh, but then eventually you kind of just figure it out. It's like, oh, now we're back and now we're back to this. And then it does a really good job of not overblowing that either, like holding your hand to a point. I thought it did a really good job of all the flashbacks it has. Cause like Nabil said, it begins and ends in the same scene or same match. And you're going back and forth, as we said, Tarantinoing it to find out like, how do we get to this moment? And I think it does a good job of how they display that throughout the film. So,
yeah. Well, let's go into our ratings of this film, and then we'll talk a little bit about some of the spoilers that we haven't touched on for this film at the end of the section. I'm going to start with you, Marco. What would you rate this film, and would you recommend it or not?
I would highly recommend this movie just because it's something different out there right now. And also, if you're a fan of Zendaya, then check it out. Also, these two young actors, first time I've ever seen them, I think, in a film. Go check them out. But I give this one a 5 stars, dude. I love this movie.
James, what about you?
You know what? I really like this too. I think this is my movie of the year so far. I'm going to give this one a 5 stars.
And Mikey, how about yourself?
I give it 4.5. 4.5 stars. Definitely recommend, though. It's a great movie. Definitely see it.
And I also gave it 4.5 stars. And yeah, total recommend. You should watch this film. This is a film that you need. If you can, still catch it in the theaters. Like we talked about, the music's great.
It just came out. There's no...
Yeah. Wow. Some people wait a little bit longer than they should to go watch a film in the theater. So, you know. All right. So stick around for a little bit. We're going to go jump to the spoiler section. If you haven't seen the film yet and you don't want to hear this part, go ahead and skip just a little bit forward and you'll be able to hear on what we're going to be giving you in our next pod. All right. So... Guys, actually, I'm going to go to you, James, since you were alluding to something at the beginning of the pod. What were your thoughts on how this movie exactly ended?
Perfect ending. Perfect ending. Loved it. We get the reveal from Patrick. By the way, maybe I like Pat. He reminds me of somebody I know, by the way, in real life.
I've seen him in some... Oh, really?
No, I just like his character. I've seen him in his that Emma movie during COVID with... Anya Taylor-Joy. That's the only movie I remember
he
from.
He played Prince Charles in the...
Sorry, Crown. You're losing this, Nibble.
he could play a young Steve Young, just saying.
Like the football player?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, what?
Yeah, I guess I could see that. Yeah.
I like his little grin. I was like,
I can see, exactly, dude. It was almost like Steve Young's grin. I was like,
You've
already been in a sports movie. Make it happen.
I thought it was great. You get that reveal from Patrick that he slept with Tashi. She doesn't know about that little
twice in their relationship, apparently.
Probably way more than twice, but
I saw that coming, dude. I was like, I knew it.
Oh yeah, which was like, I mean, I get it. She's more. I think she's more physically attracted to Patrick from the get go. So it's like one of those things. And he calls her out on her bullshit too. And
but she also calls him out too about like how he's just doing this.
He's a piece of shit too.
He's proving this shit for just go back home.
Yeah, go back. Like I said, she did that line about putting a gun in your mouth. I was like, whoa, I like that. She's fiery. But I love that he reveals it, and then Art's kind of does a little side glance like, this bitch, right? And I love that part. And he's like, get the fuck out of here. And the guy's like, oh, violation. So then he basically just matches it up. So it comes out of a tie. But then that is the fire that just reignites Art. And Patrick even knows because... Art shows him that he's going to do his power serve, basically. This is his tell, too. And he basically is telling him, like, it's like two boxers going in on that last bell, and they're like, we're going to fucking duke it out in the middle. None of this hugging bullshit. We're just going to fucking slug it out. And I love the shots. I love how that's where we get more POV. We get a shot where it's a clear court. We're just seeing their feet from the bottom up. It's just some artsy looking shit. Yep. And Art wins, he gets the thing, but they embrace at the end. It's almost like their relationship / friendship is rekindled. Tashi ends the movie with saying her come on line, which basically signals that she finally has seen them now finally play good tennis. It's like she's been waiting for that for 13 fucking years. And it's fucking beautiful, man. It's just, it's raw, it's emotional. And I thought it's like, I don't need to know anything else. I don't give a shit about anything. Movies don't need to. Oh, what happens after? You know, like, do they become? I don't know what. It doesn't need to do that, is what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It ends perfectly. I thought this was a perfect ending. And I was like, whoa. And then it just cuts to black. And then it's like directed by Luca Guadagnino. I'm like, this Italian motherfucker, man. So that's all.
He did it again.
I know. I said, you son of a bitch.
Anything else to add, guys, on a standout part of the spoilers or just on how this movie ends?
I agree. It's a perfect fucking ending, dude. That just that embrace at the end, you know, and the fact that it lands on that you know, it starts kind of like where it begins. These guys, you know, were two peas in a pod and everything. Then they're at odds, and then it ends with them embracing each other and finally like accepting the events that have happened. It ends on a fucking great fucking match. It's so fucking intense, and Art earns that win. Like it turns out that Pat doesn't go easy on him like he was supposed to. Like he says, fuck.
I think when
this.
They do that grin at each other, they're like, "Hey, I'm not holding back," basically, right?
Yeah. And that's what made it that much more intense. Is they veer away from the plan and they make it a game, like Tashi's character, you know, says, and everyone ultimately gets what they want because Pat always thought that Art was always holding back as well, too, and was never, you know, as aggressive as he should have been. And he gets the game he wants, even though he lost, and he loses fair and square to Art's top game. Art gets the win that he needs for his freaking ego to come back, or his career to come back. And
mojo kind of bad.
Yeah, and Taji, like James said, got the match that she wanted to see. She gets that good tennis because that's what she... That's what makes motivates her. That's what gets her. She's always after whatever the biggest challenge is. And that's why she only hones in on these guys whenever they're challenging her, whenever they push back. And she likes that pushback. She even like shows it on the court when she freaking yells, you know, let's fucking go. It shows that that's what she thrives on. So this ending just captivates all that and is just fucking amazing.
Yeah, completes the Triforce, right? Completes the Triforce.
Yes.
That relationship that we were saying that the I think.
God. Trouble, is this right? A fucking Legend of Zelda? What? No. What?
Right. But I mean, seriously, like Marco was saying, like everybody got what they needed and then now they can just be a trio and just kind of live life. Right. I mean,
who knows? But I mean, did they at least go to Applebee's and get some apps together afterwards? You think?
Probably. Absolutely.
Anything else, guys? Any other spoiler stuff we can talk about or?
Not really spoiler, just the whole hurricane scene where Pat and Tashi, right before they have sex in the back of the car, like everything's going freaking batshit insane. The music starts and they're having this back and forth argument was just so fucking good, man.
She spits in his face good. And they just slow down time and they look at it and he starts smiling at her and I just knew, I said, it's about to get real sweaty in that car.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right, well, that's it, guys. That's the end of the podcast. Appreciate everybody for tuning in. Marco, let them know how everyone can reach us and stay connected.
Of course, you guys can listen and follow us on your preferred podcast platform. We're everywhere. For a convenient link to all our social media channels, visit linktree.com/moviepalspod. That's linktr.ee/moviepalspod. And remember, hit that subscribe button and you'll never miss an episode on this set or the next.
Plus, catch us on TikTok for sneak peeks of upcoming episodes and more exciting movie content. Follow us at Movie Pals Pod.
And don't forget to tune in to our next podcast, episode number 174, where we will be reviewing Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Thank you, Nabil. Until next time, this is James,
Marco,
Nabil,
and Mikey.
Have a great one.